Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Tiffany and myself, Stephen. We've got a big date coming up. It's one of those dates that come around every year, sometime in February. It's the budget debate.
Yes, Budget 2026. Yep. Now, this is where Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, Lawrence Wong, he will make a speech on the 12th of February, where he will lay out his plans for 2026.
Yeah, tell us whether Singapore has budget or no budget.
Sure, there's definitely
sure
budget.
Sure to have budget, yeah. Because there's so many concerns, and every year we all find that things are getting more expensive, more challenging in the economy. So cost of living concerns, definitely one of those things on the agenda, but also talking about employment challenges and how the government, I guess, can also help companies and businesses.
Yes. I think, you know, definitely when we were talking about, you know, what do we hope to see out of this budget, I mean, a lot of Singaporeans, I guess, will be wondering whether there'll be more CDC vouchers.
Oh, is that your wish list?
That's on my wish list, but definitely as a parent, I would like more family leave, family care leave, you know, it's never enough. Today, I think we want to hear from one person who is about to enter the job market soon. And we also want to hear from a business owner on what is on their budget wish list.
That's right. And we have them in studio with us today. Let's welcome Shaza Dalila Rahmat, a final year undergraduate from the Nanyang Technological University.
Yep. Hi, everyone.
And we have Beatrice Liu, CEO and co-founder of Oriental Remedies Group. They run traditional Chinese medicine clinics.
Yes. Hello, everyone.
Shaza, you are about 3 months away from graduation.
That's
right. What's the game plan when it comes to job search?
Well, I must say, the game plan has started like 2 years ago.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It's not 3 months.
Oh.
So, okay, my game plan has been, and I think I speak for most of my peers in NTU, we've started job hunting like early on in uni, you know, because we've always had to search for internships, right? So while looking for internships, I was also on the hunt for full-time roles. You know, I would save them, I would bookmark them. So my full-time job has always been at the back of my mind. But I think recently, because as I approach my final year, I've been a bit more intentional with my job application. So I'm trying to apply to companies. I would categorize them as my dream jobs, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, it would be the companies that I want to work with, companies that I see a career in. Yeah, but there are also companies where I apply to that, you know, I just send mass applications to.
Let's just be brutally honest here. I mean, there's first tier, second tier.
Correct.
And no choice, I need a job kind of job.
Yeah,
right?
Press the panic button.
How many applications have you put in so far?
I wouldn't say I'm that crazy as of now. I would say 20.
20
just
overall.
20, just 20, yeah. Okay. And I think that's very little already.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah, really, really, yeah.
Oh, very little already.
I think nowadays, the students are really, really savvy. I think during our time, it's like, you know, we won't be thinking of jobs like 2 to 3 years ahead. I do see this trend. I think a lot of the youngers, you know, the start with T00 onwards ones. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Yes. Yes.
That's how young she is.
Yeah, they are like really, I think, savvy in the way that they position themselves. I think they plot, when I look at their CVs when we interview, the end job that they want, a lot of times in the internship, they have already plotted the relevant skill sets. And that's why they feel that they can command that premium as well, because they have relevant experience.
Do you find that a good or a bad thing?
I think it's not a bad thing at all. Yeah.
Okay.
I think because when they come in, we expect people to start contributing as soon as possible. So the more relevant experience they have had before, I think the more likely they are, you know, going up that learning curve faster as well. So I think it's a good thing.
We are the generation that stacks up our internship, you know.
Right.
So we also put that pressure upon ourselves. We want to be better. We want to be job ready when we apply for our full-time roles. But the mismatch here is that some companies, I would say not all, don't recognize that. They don't recognize that we are ready, you know, and they might not hire us. They are still looking for the 3 to 5
years. But you are not ready.
Yeah, just because you have 5 internships doesn't mean you are ready. I mean, you haven't had a real job yet.
Okay, maybe I can defend her at this point. Okay.
Oh, we are not attacking her. Yeah, okay.
I actually think it's a culture shift. I think previous jobs is a lot of like, oh, you try to do your job well and then you see if your boss notices you and you move along. I think it's actually not a bad thing to plot your own career goals, right? Mm-hmm. To have a ambition of where I want to get to. And along the way, I think that provides clarity for the manager or the management as well to say that, hey, this is your goal. Maybe you're here, but let's explore where are the gaps to help you to get right. there. Versus somebody who is completely lost and then we can't help.
I mean,
very good company though.
But there is ambition versus expectation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think they're very different things. Mm-hmm. Ambition meaning I want to do well, I will push myself hard.
Yeah.
Expectation meaning I come in and I think, oh yeah, I've done pretty well already. I should be coming in at this level.
Mm. So I guess, Shaza, do you have ambition or expectation?
I think it's more ambition. Okay. You know, okay. we want to reach these goals, but, and I think these companies can help us reach these goals. Mm. But of course, we understand where we are in the market. You know, we don't think we're better than those that are already there, you know, but we want to enter this market because we want to learn from you guys. The companies also need to understand that we also want to learn and like, yeah, we want to grow in these companies, but it's also like, can you take the chance on us?
Give us a ballpark, right? A range. Mm. How much salary are you expecting, you know, in your first job?
I think a good ballpark figure would be 4 to 4.5.
Okay.
And that's already like the minimum that a lot of people are expecting.
As a fresh graduation.
Yeah. Is that a lot? Why?
Your first job? How much did you get?
Steve.
Yes, it was over 20 years ago. I know, but yeah. My first job, $2,000.
Oh, which year was that?
Yeah, more than 20 years ago. Yeah. But then again, even with inflation, I don't know.
Mm. How much would you expect now?
How much? I think what would be fair, 3, 5 to 4.
When you hear, like, I mean, do you sort of offer?
I think,
you know,
it is quite similar to what we see in the market, okay. The expectation. But I also think that, okay, she's quite a unique breed, right? She's very articulate. She's like, part of her series. Not everybody from college is like this, right? Mm. So for those people, it's like for yourself, you probably have aspiration to like a MNC or a big firm, right? And that's where they can also pay that kind of salary. Mm. I think for SMEs, we also have to be practical in how we actually start people's salary. Otherwise, there's a, you know, there's a limit to how much we can grow and, you know, manage the expectation ongoing. So I really think it's down to the individual and the match. But we have had people who are willing to take a cut if they see a potential of growth in the skill sets they want in the company.
And actually, help us understand. So for SMEs, give us a ballpark. Mm. What is your starting pay like?
Actually, it's around that range that she mentioned.
But these are for TCM physicians?
No. Even across...
Just the general HR staff kind of...
It really depends on the function. I would say it's very hard to judge. And whether the person has worked with us before. I think people who have interned with us, we can command a slightly better premium when they come on board. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we know that they can work like you said before. So it really depends on function.
In terms of running your business, of course, manpower is one of the main issues, but it's also, there are many other aspects to it.
Mm.
And one of the things Singapore government has been trying to encourage businesses is to adopt more technology, to use things like AI to help, overcome some of the more administrative, logistical kind of things. Mm. Is that something that you found feasible for your company as an SME?
I think actually for us, the journey didn't start with AI. It started with more digitization first, right? So I think from initial like pen and paper, when I joined the business, we started with like more cloud solutions and all. And that's where a lot of the grants actually helped us, right? So we have a cloud for HR, cloud for finance. But I think moving ahead, if I look at least, I think it's not just an industry specific thing, right? Like AI is changing everything. But for TCM, I actually see the gap as a trust. Right? How do you know that you're improving when you go for X number of treatments?
Mm-hmm.
I can do acupuncture for you, but how do you know that you'll get better?
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of that data is what AI is really helpful for us. So actually, we just got our grant last week announced with Oracle. It's actually sponsored by EDB under the ECI. So many short forms, but okay, yes, the ECI. But I think that is actually one thing we're going to start using AI. Actually, in a very basic way, which is when we go through consultation with the patient, the AI will actually scribe all the details of the clinic notes.
Or like a transcript.
Mm. Yes, correct. But the big change now in the technology is previously, you know, it's like 60% accurate only, right?
Yeah.
But now with the LLM, the updated models, apparently they can capture like the Lally laws, they will filter those out,
right.
And they only come up with the clinical notes.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's a big change for us because our physicians, even though they are Singaporeans and they speak in English, they actually write their notes in Chinese. Yeah, because they are trained in China, right? Yeah, so imagine the brain power, right? They're trying to get the notes and then they're typing in Chinese.
Yeah.
So we're trying to replace all of that brain power with AI so that they can focus on the patient interaction.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay.
So the AI is typing out in Chinese or English?
It can scribe in Chinese and then you can auto-translate.
Any language you want.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So what other kind of pain points or challenges do you face as a business?
I think increasingly, I feel that in the past year, I've seen a lot of competition from foreign companies, and they usually have very, very established brands in their existing markets, and they also have quite deep pockets. So because we are still part of retail, when we try to expand clinics, I feel the pressure on rental where, you know, we are being outbidded by other companies, and when we ask, it's usually like a foreign company or foreign brand. Yeah, so I think that is definitely driving the cost pressure. And also ideal locations, right? Like for us, retail location is really important. So I think that's one big challenge, not just me, I think a lot of business owners are facing. So with that then comes the pressure, not just on cost, but talent. Because when these companies come in, they are also trying to grab all the top talents like herself. Mm-hmm. So where does that leave us, right? So I think these are common threats that I see across different business owners. Mm.
Do you wish there was some more support in terms of grants and funding to help companies like yourself in this area?
I also stand from the point of policymakers, right? Like no money is ever enough, if you ask any business owner. But if you were to balance all the needs, I feel that we can also do things with our circle of influence. So with AI adoption, example, like IMDA also has a grant. So we have been wanting to build our in-house tech team for a long time. And now they not just support like salary of the tech team, they actually support up to two key projects, right? Okay. So what that means is that there's somebody in-house to not just help us adopt, right? Otherwise it's really technical, but also someone to help us through the change management. So I feel that there are already pockets of these available. I feel the gap is most people don't know, because I think a lot of business owners, we are so busy in the day-to-day operations, we don't even know where to get help.
So ironically, even though we may have a lot of support, if you don't know about it,
I think one of the key announcements that happened last week was that Singapore must position ourselves as a global AI leader. Okay, I want to go start with Shahzad first. What does that mean to you? I mean, your degree is in English with a comms, you know, at a side.
I'm pretty hopeful about it. You know, I don't think I'm discouraged by it, because I think there'll be more opportunities. I as much as people would say, you know, AI would replace our jobs, AI replace our jobs, I don't believe that, because at the end of the day, I still think there'll still be a need for human interaction, you know. But I would think that the first thing that I realized is that there might be a replacement of entry-level jobs, you know, because back in the, traditionally, your entry-level jobs would be like the research or like the financing and stuff like that, or even transcribing, you know, like you said. Yeah. But when I hear AI, it's going to replace the entry-level jobs, right? It's going to replace those tasks, right? Then what are we left with? You know, what are the fresh guys left with? So I think as much as we want to be hopeful about it, we're still dictating like where this will leave us.
Are you concerned that this may mean less jobs in the market for you guys? Because to be fair, again, AI has been around for a few years now, and we always joke that a lot of university students all minor in AI anyway, right?
So
actually coming out to work and, you know, with AI and finding a way to work with it shouldn't be something that's too scary.
I think the problem would be that companies would expect way more. Like they expect that we know how to use AI, then they will expect way more, or someone with a 3 to 5 year work experience, you know. And but then like they might forget that, you know, we're fresh grads and we still need training. I think we still need to learn on the job, but because of the expectation, I think.
But that's what your 5 internships were for.
Well, I guess.
Right? How will you position yourself differently now, knowing that your competition is not just with all the other people around you, but the fact that it's also with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have some level of AI skills because, like you say, you won't be applying for these entry-level jobs that are not there anymore. Mm. So how are you going to reposition yourself?
I think really it's more to do with the soft skills. I think I would think that for me, myself, I think I would have to sell myself more as an adaptable person, right? Mm. I really have to adapt to any changes that comes my way. You know, whatever changes and whatever they make me do or stuff like that, I need to show interest. I need to show that, like, you know, I want to upskill, I want to improve myself. So I think really the skill that a lot of my peers and I would need would be the adaptability to the changes that can happen. You know, we can't expect that the world will go to our way, right? Yeah. So I think the best way is to really be resilient. Mm. Yeah. So yeah, I would say adaptability.
I'm sure as an entrepreneur, Beatrice will tell you that it's true. I mean, you need to be able to roll with the punches and pivot as and
that's
when it's necessary to adapt and change the changing times. I mean, Beatrice, with all these government grants out there, I mean, what are some of the pros and cons of having them? I mean, do you ever feel that because sometimes you say you tap on this, but because of that, the fund says you can only do A, B, C. You can't do something else. Are those restrictions, do they limit what you can do?
It's a good question. I think first and foremost, we got to be clear like why we adopt certain tech and what we get the grant for, right? I think a lot of businesses, we jump into solutions without really first understanding what is the problem we're trying to solve. Yeah, and I think when that is clear, the grant and the corresponding solution you choose should match accordingly. So I think with that, I'm quite thankful. I think since COVID days, we've had a variety of different grants from government, NTUC, CTC, EDB and all. And I think it definitely deflects the risk, right? Because if not, the cost outlay of tech tends to be very high. And then SMEs like myself were not there to invest because there's just too much risk. But example, I think during COVID, where the grant was really generous, and since the patient volume was down, we actually took the time to revamp our patient management system. Yeah, so from pen and paper to automation and all. So till today, we're using the system and it's enable us to scale from like 2 to 6 locations where patients' data is secure and, you know, it's centralized. So I think a lot of it has come to the architecturing and the designing. But the cons, I would say, I think this is consistent for a lot of business owners, is the claim time can take quite long sometimes.
Okay. Oh, tell us about it.
Yeah. So if you, let's say you invest like a 6-figure sum into a tech solution and you pay upfront, right? But after you complete the project, then it takes like, you know, any time for like 1 to 2 months to get the grant. So if that delays for any reason because they need to audit, rightly so, but if that delays, then it impacts the cash flow of the business. Yeah.
Okay. So unfortunately, it's only the pay now only works for the company. Correct.
So help me to understand, like for your business, you mentioned that, you know, you guys are using AI, will be using AI to help with the transcribing. What other sort of like AI can you adopt, especially, you know, in the TCM business, it's a lot of human touch. Right now, you're talking about systems. You're talking about technology. But what about people? Because I get a sense that, you know, the government's always trying to make sure that we increase our AI skills. Because at the end of the day, you can be a global leader where everything is automated, but nobody understands how to do it. So how does that fit into your big picture?
I think absolutely. I think change management is the biggest thing to any tech, like including AI. I think, which is one, actually, the wish list I want to talk about later. But I think a lot of it's got to do with culture first, right? I think for them it's a given, like you say, they have a minor in AI, but actually for people even our age, right, you'll be surprised, like they are professionals but they don't really know how to prompt well. Right, so how do you actually build a culture if you can't even start with that, right? So I think a lot got to do with the basic adoption first, and then the in-house expert, I think that will help as well, right? When you have a CTO, if not, even me, I cannot, like, how do I educate the team if I don't have that technical expertise?
In other words, so not just providing the funding and the resources, but helping people understand how to use them and how to tap and how to work the AI. So saying we need that bridge as well.
Yes.
So there is this other program called GRIT, Graduate Industry Traineeship, and is given by the government where you can get up to 6 months of traineeship at certain companies. You've heard of this program?
Of course.
What do you think of it?
Yeah, I think all of us, a lot of us have heard of the program, but I would say not many of us have applied to it.
Oh, why
I
not?
Think because fact of the matter is, a lot of us feel that like it's kind of just an elevated internship because the the job descriptions are more or less like similar to a job to a full-time role, but the pay and the I would say the benefits don't match the skills that we need to bring to the table. Yeah, and also the fact that it's a traineeship, it sounds just like a beautified internship, because this traineeship, they don't promise us a full-time conversion. It's just a 3 to 6 months experience. So while on one hand it's good that, you know, we can add this to our resume, on the other it doesn't promise us anything. It's just a matter of choice. Do I go for an internship or do I do a traineeship? It's not a traineeship or a full-time job. So it's an option, but it's not the number one option. I think it's a great opportunity. That's one, because I this is one way the government is you know, offering options, right, for both companies and those looking for a job.
I feel it's not an easy thing to navigate, because on one hand, as the government, you go, you know, I want to try and make sure that fresh grads stay
relevant,
optimistic.
Yeah, stay optimistic.
And stay optimistic about the job market. So I offer this kind of traineeship, like Beatrice say, you know, she would offer, you know, interns even a higher pay if they convert.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as if you are a fresh grad, you're like, but I wish I have a full-time job.
Yeah,
no, I just want a full-time job. Yeah, so let's talk about wish list right now.
Okay.
Shaza, maybe we start with you first.
I mean, I would want the government to probably incentivize these companies to hire fresh grads. If they incentivize these entry-level roles, then these entry-level roles wouldn't be looking for those with experience, you know. It would, in fact, attract more fresh grads to apply and, like, you know, take a chance. Companies can take a chance on these fresh grads. Yeah. So I think it's also could the government pay our probation periods, you know, like incentivize the probation period so that, let's say, if during this 3 to 6 months we do our probation, right, the companies don't have to fork it out of their own pockets. It could be from the government. That'll so then really yeah nice, so yeah. Yeah, then it wouldn't it wouldn't put the burden on you guys, right? Mm. And then you guys might also want to take more chances on on the fresh grads. Yeah, so these are some of my wishes.
But I would go back that this the GRIT program is a bit like that, actually. I mean, if I'm a private company and I wanted to hire you, I would put you in this program.
Yeah, but if that could promise us like a conversion, then that would be
so this
that
would be a bit more promising. You're saying promise you a job. So that's very hard. Because here, many companies also have, sometimes they have management trainee programs. Yep. You're committed, but
at the end of the day, it doesn't. Yeah.
You guys don't stay long enough. So I think if you ask many employers, they say the young people change jobs very frequently.
Yes.
So it makes it hard for companies to want to invest in the younger employees as well.
But that's the thing. Hasn't that been around for a while though? Like what? This, the idea of changing jobs every 2 years. It's not with this just our generation. I think it's been around for quite some time, right? So the ones that are changing the jobs now are like, you know, from like, I don't know, those who have been already in the workforce and now they're jumping jobs and now they're getting like a better pay, you know, they're getting more exposure and stuff like that. But then the ones that they think would change jobs aren't even getting a foot into the industry.
I mean, the truth of the matter is pay is one thing, but I think it's also the job security. That at the end of the day, there's a job waiting for them in the market, whether it's through conversion or through just, you know, them working and asking for it. So so I think that's also what's driving
the
underlying fear. Because that's what you are hearing from your peers or your peers are trying very hard.
Actually, I just want to add to this. I think one of the expectations skewing, right, is also due to very high profile companies paying a lot more. Like a couple of interns getting like $6,000, I've heard. And then this goes out to the whole market and everyone is wondering why they are not at $6,000.
Yes,
really the problem statement we're trying to solve here is, what about the people who are not even getting jobs at, you know, at the exit? Point, right? Yes. And then they are like wondering for like 6 to 12 months doing nothing. And I think that's what that program is trying to resolve. So I think for me, my wish list, I always take the point of like two sides, right? Like business owner, but also as the policymaker. If I think my small wish list, which I think is very doable, is let's help more of the nation adopt AI by actually sponsoring, you know, this subscription for like Microsoft Copilots.
Okay.
Because now a lot of the grants are going after the big projects, right? They pay you like, I don't know, like really like 5-6 figure sums to download some software and you learn a new thing. But the basic thing of like, even for my company, we use like Gemini. And then when the company is growing now across all the business, we have 80 people. And you pay like a small subscription on everyone every month. It's actually adding up to quite a lot.
Mm.
But we don't want them to use the open source, right? Because then information about company is not secure. Mm. So I think this adds up to the OPEX, even though it's not an overhead, like one-time investment. So I think any subsidy for that, for you know, SMEs that reach a certain size or revenue would be really helpful.
So you're asking for support in the smaller things, not the big transformation, change my whole, you know, admin procedure, but just to help pay for the little things along the way that allow you to improve.
Okay. So I think a lot of SMEs would benefit from it because now all of that is out of pocket on our own. The second one that's very specific to my industry, linked to like building trust, and you asked about building, you know, identity as like global leader, right? I think we need a bit more research really on how TCM can be quantified on a big scale. Like, I don't think private entities like us can take that on. If you all have seen TCM, when I was younger, the physician always say, oh, you're so hitty. Mm-hmm. And then I went away thinking, what is this hitty thing, right? Like,
speak my language.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Too hitty, too cold.
So when I first met my co-founder, she said, basically, it's inflammation. You have inflammation and you can track it through certain blood markers like CRP or something like that. So, you know, if we have large enough studies to show that TCM through a period of time can actually help with very base longevity markers, right? Like everyone's big on like living
wellness, living long.
But actually we try to treat chronic conditions, but the base of chronic condition, a lot of it is like inflammation. So if you can treat it at that level, it resolves a lot of issues, and that's where TCM can fit into healthier SG preventative care as well.
Yeah, so you're hoping that the government will be looking more into preventative healthcare.
Yeah, and research for TCM in this aspect that is tied up with Western markers.
So a better understanding of like what it means to be heaty, because we've all heard it, you know. I just thought it just meant I'm hot stuff, you know.
Yeah.
No, so I thought this is not such a bad thing. That's pretty good.
And it's the third one I can add, because I was a caregiver to my mom for a period of time. I feel that now we are giving like generic like grocery vouchers or CDC, but if there can be like a, you know, like a, almost a wellness or integrated fund for these caregivers, which they can use for, you know, going to the active SG gyms and stuff, just to prevent burnout, you know. So I think that would be helpful to take care of this group of people, because by 2030, I think 1 in 4 Singaporeans will be above 65, which means a lot of them will have a caregiver. So we need to take care of the caregivers.
You raise a good point, and we are an aging society, and this is a big issue. And I think it's not just about putting money or funding, it's actually about trying to change the way we approach caregiving and our whole culture surrounding it, so that we recognize this as a very difficult job, actually. It's a job, you know, that we now take for granted in many ways.
I think at work we do a lot of flex wellness timing to allow for this, but I think more of it needs to be done on a societal level.
Well, there you have it. So I think there are quite a few requests. I think, you know, government will be coming out to try and help people in different ways. But that's the challenge, right? Everyone has different needs. And how do we help everyone at the same time, right?
Well, with that, I think, you know, we are going to be looking forward to 12 February. Again, you know, what is going to be in this bag of goodies, we don't know. But next week, we will be analyzing the budget with a group of experts. So hopefully there's something in there for everyone.
Yeah, we'll find out. Stay tuned. Join us next week.
Bye.